ね。
No pressure, just it's Nogea Shalom Weiss. Do you know when you'll be able to get to it?
I'll get to
like,
it.
What?
I'll get to it
tomorrow morning.
Tomorrow morning.
Thank you very much.
want to continue a little bit with some of the historical background. We talked about the primary scourge of 19th century Europe for the Jewish community was, on one hand, reform, and the other hand, Haskalah. And again, remember, these are very, very different movements, and they had different methodologies. The reform was Stamazayin Akira of Torah, denial of Torah Min HaShemayim, and reform was not an intellectual movement. Reform was for the Hamon Am, who were Parkei Ol. If you were a maskil, the reform had no importance to you, because Mimanafshach, you either were a religious Jew who was a maskil, or you denied everything, so why have a reform service? I mean, there was no particular reason for an intellectual to be a reform Jew. Also, I should point out that the Hashpah of reform was not as widespread as Haskalah. Reform existed in Germany, of course, that's where it started, and it then spread to Hungary. So Hungary and Germany were the two centers of reform. In Poland, Lithuania, and Russia, there was no reform movement at all. I think I mentioned last week that in Krakow, there was a reform temple, but in Krakow, the reform temple just meant they gave the drusha in Polish. It was a totally from Shul. So there was no real reform movement. That is why, LaMashal, the Gra was very involved in the fighting against Haskalah, although the Maskilim considered him to be a Maskil. I'll talk about that. And the Gra, of course, as we know, was also involved in the Machlekes against Hasidus. The Gra was not involved in the Reform movement, well, partly because in his lifetime it was at the very, very beginning of it. But also in Lita there was no Reform movement, so it wasn't Nogeya, the Shetach, in which the Gra had his greatest Hashpa. So the two Leichamim against the Reform, one needs to be aware of, was the Chasam Sofer, was the greatest, most activist fighter against the reform movements, and the Native Yehuda in Prague, Czechoslovakia, adjacent to Hungary, was also very, very involved. Huh?
Hirsch, where did he come in?
Hirsch is much later. Remember, I'm talking about, we're in the early 19th century. Okay, Rav Hirsch is the 18...
years before.
Say again?
It was in the 18th century.
What? No, I said the Gra was. I know this. You know, you're implying that I don't know these things. I mean, the Gra was at the very beginning, the very, very beginning of the reform, which is one reason why I said he was such a leichem. Rav Hirsch at the other end of it. Rav Hirsch at the other end of it is the end of the 19th century. Rav Hirsch comes on the scene at a time when the reform movement already achieved tremendous, tremendous victories in Germany. Ad kedei kach. That in Germany their kemat was almost no Orthodox presence. We'll talk about that. And Rav Hirsch was able to restore, he was machzor atara liyashna. But the beginning leichamim, the leichamim at the beginning of the reform movement were primarily the Chasam Sofer and the Native Yehuda. The Chasam Sofer much more so. The Chasam Sofer, again, because initially the reform movement tried to go with the pretense of halacha. Pretense. Rav Aaron Choriner, who some say were called Acher Choriner, wrote shuvas about organs on Shabbos and Shir and different lumdas of heterim, etc. But the Chassam Sofer saw that the person that was ultimately espousing kafira, and that followers of him were even worse. They were going to be kaifer from biyikar, and the Chassam Sofer made a tremendous, tremendous machlekes. That is why Hungarian Judaism became almost a little bit fanatical in some ways, where everything was. Chassam Sofer used the phrase "chadash asher min atayra." You can't be mishana min. In fact, there was a whole maisa. They say. Chassam Sofer.
So
Rav. Aaron Choriner. Aaron Choriner was a rav. He was a rabbi, and he went along with this, with these mahalchim. Now the thing is, say again.
Chassam Sofer no debuters. They joined forces at all, or
they were separate. They were separate. But the Chassam Sofer by far, the maybe it was a little bit. The Chassam Sofer was the big lechem. Rabbi Kiveger, Rabbi Kiveger was Chassam Sofer's father-in-law from the Chassam Sofer's second marriage. Even though they're kemat the same age, they're only two or three years apart. But Rabbi Kiveger is Mari Ruchami. It's interesting, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu has an interesting Ashbacha. He once said about the Chassam Sofer, who had a big yeshiva in Pressburg, a very big yeshiva in Pressburg. He once said that his father-in-law was the Gadol Hador. But his Derech HaLimud was not matzim for B'nai Yeshiva. Some say for health, but the Hashgacha is exactly the opposite. In the Litvishi Yeshivas, Rebbe Kiveger's Chidushim are learned much, much more than Chassam Sefer. Chassam Sefer held, Rebbe Kiveger's Derech was not for B'nai Yeshiva so much, but okay. Although they say, even in Slobodka, they say, Rav Ischer Zalman used to say that when you had to prepare a Chabura, right? You had to prepare a Shtikol Taira, you had to prepare a Chabura, he would tell people to base their Chabura on the Ketzais, not on Rebbe Kiveger. What was the cheshbon? He said, because the Kesais will have a kasha, will have a teretz, but then you'll have a pir, you know, you'll have a ha'ara on it, you'll have a kasha on it, you'll have a different mahalach. The Kesais will kind of open up different things. As Rebbe Kiveger says, once Rebbe Kiveger says something, there's nothing more to say. Rebbe Kiveger says, it's nigmar. He says it's not gonna cause you to have more things to say. Okay,
and
but
it's
huh?
And
even the sarchis. No, it's a funny thing. This is always a shaila. What do you do here? Because they say in the Torah of Elf that Rebbe Kiveger is a tzorech iyun on the taisus. So you want to fend for the taisus. You say, how can you fend for the taisus? Rebbe Kiveger is a tzorech iyun. You can't, right? But you say, well, okay, but I want to fend for taisus, right? I want to make taisus good. He says, no, you can't. It's kind of usher to almost. It's kamat usher to fend for Rebbe Kiveger. In other words, the assumption is any teretz you give for the for tzorech iyun of Rebbe Kiveger is behechrich wrong, because either it's wrong or he thought of it and schlucked it up without necessarily saying the same with the prophet. Okay, but the Chassam Sefer coined, well, he didn't coin the phrase, I mean, Chadash Aserman Atayris in the Gemara, referring to the Yisr Chadash, but he applied it to all sorts of innovations, including things that are relatively innocuous, such as giving a drasha. What happened in Krakow, giving a drasha in Hungarian or German or Polish? He said, absolutely not. Ad kidei kach, that to this very day. You know, I remember many, many years ago, like 30 years ago, I was giving a shir in a shul in Baltimore, and it was miyusad on the minhagim of the Chassam Sefer. You know, most people didn't even know this, but a person went over to me after the shir and he said, you know, he showed me some takana. He pulled out a takana book. The Chassam Sefer says Rav cannot give a shir in the Lashon Laz, only in Yiddish. So I said, what am I supposed to do? I didn't speak Yiddish fluently to give a shir. So he said, well, the matur is in a side room. It can't be in the base medrash. So he said that they teach it in the side room. So they tell a maisa that the Chassam Sefer was once at some vacation place, you know, place in the country for the summer, and Epis, he made Kiddush, and he the Chassam Sefer's minog is that based on the idea that you're not mechalik psukim, right? The problem is, but he every biker is the middle of a pasuk. The Chassam Sefer is maskil v'yara lekim eis kol asherasa v'nei tayv miyad, which was not the stam minog. This was the Chassam Sefer's own minog. So a little child told his father, he says, we can't eat here because this man is Mishana the Minog of Kiddush. Like he learned that. And the father was so embarrassed that he says, we can't eat by the Chassam Sefer. The Chassam Sefer kissed the boy. He says, Baruch Hashem, that's exactly the attitude you have to have. You see Shinuyim, you see Pritzas Geder. He says, Bichlal, you have to reject it. So now, I want to say an interesting horror though. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said, around 50 or 60 years later, and this is after the Reform movement was nispashate, especially in Germany, that he said, had he been in the time of the Chassam Sefer, and their lives overlapped, but he was young, had he been able to talk to the Chassam Sefer, he said, Rousseau Slanker said, he would have had a different shita. Because the Chassam Sefer shita of Richuk, being merachek legamri, not being mischaber with Rishayim, and Rav Hirsch, by the way, followed that as well. That's the policy called Ospritz, in which the Orthodox Kehillas under Rav Hirsch had no connection, no shaychus with the Reform. They wouldn't work on, you know, garbage collection or common issues like that, right? So, on one hand, it was mechazek the Frum community. But as Yisrael Salanter said, it had the potential to be merachek. Or not the potential, it was merachek many people. And Rav Yisrael Salanter said he would have advocated more of a notion of what we would call kirov today, and we'll talk exactly how that plays out. But this idea of what Rav Hirsch held ostrich, later, Altus Chaber LaRosha, the Chassam Sofer of Chadash Asr Min HaTorah, of Pirud, of Mamish, not connecting at all, not being gairus, not talking, not having any collaboration. It was Mechazek, the Haredi of the Torah communities, very much in Hungary, but it was also Merachik, those. So these are Shikulim that are still very Nogeya today regarding how we relate to non-religious communities. Yeah, we'll talk about it when we get to Rav Hirsch. Again, Rav Hirsch, remember, is at the end of the century. We're talking about at the very beginning of the Milchama. I just want to say, just to get a little ahead, since you mentioned Rav Hirsch, I just want to point out that Rav Hirsch, who did have the hashkaf of the Chassam Sofer, of not having anything to do with the Reformed Jews, in Germany itself, there were two different kehilas. There was the Rav Hirsch, that's Ostrit. Ostrit is rip away. It's called Ostrit. And then there was the Gemeinde, which were Orthodox Rabbanim, who would unite with even the Reform for matters of common concern, whether it be safety, whether it be cleaning the streets, whether it be stucca, because, aniyim, etc. And this was a big, big issue in Germany all the way until the Chorban in World War II. And that is the unified Shehila of the Gemeinde versus the Ostrit. The Ostrit is the Kabbalah of the Chassam Sofer that Rav Hirsch took in. That's right, that's where Wurzburger Rav had a very different position. And the Sweet Aish, Rav Yichiel Yaakov Weinberg, was very much in favor of a united Gila. And I want to point out that in Lita Gufa, let's take Vilna, in Lita Gufa, there was not an Ostrit, meaning Rav Chaim Eiser. Vilna did not have a Rav. Vilna did not have a Rav since before the time of the Gra. And not because of the Gra, but in his time, and shortly before, there was a big, big machlokes, and they resolved that there would not be a Rav of Vilna, there would just be Moirei Tzedek, there would be a Vada Rabbanim, there would be an Av Beis Din, but there would not be a Rav of Vilna. They wanted to change it. They wanted to make Rav Chaim Eiser the Rav of Vilna. He turned it down because he said that's not the Messiah. The Chavitz Chaim said that was a mistake because you were mechazek irreligious elements. But a city like Vilna, and Brisk for that matter, even under the Brisker Rav, Brisk had many, many elements of non-religious, either not so much Reform, because I said Reform was not a big deal in Lita, but it had communists and Bundists and Zionists and secularists and the like, and they worked together as a unified kehila on matters of tzedaka and on matters of safety and matters what you call common concern. And the Kabbalah of Ostritz, of not being mechaber with Rishayim, that taka was not the minog in Lita. But again, Rav Chaim Eiser Gufa explained that that's because there was no Reform, meaning to work with a guy who simply has no religion, I can do that because he's not going to be meses umediach, so to speak. To work with Reform was a more dangerous thing because they had shitas, they had religious hashkafa of some sort. So Mimela, you can't be Madama Milsa La Milsa. In Vilna,
I'm saying. Did they survive? I hear a lot of communities that are like Hirsch communities.
Yeah. Those kehilos did not survive. On the other hand, the hashkafa of Gemeinde is in fact the modern Orthodox hashkafa in the United States. So in a sense, their philosophy survived, even though their particular kehilos not. There aren't a lot of Hirsch kehilos. There's Washington Heights is the official successor of Frankfurt. And then what you now have, actually you have it in Bnei Brak, you have it in Yerushalayim. Yeah, you have, but that's not so much a Rav Hirsch thing, that's more of a thing of going back to Minhagei Ashkenaz. And that's not even connected to Hirsch. In fact, you could even argue Rav Hirsch's Gila didn't survive, because Rav Hirsch was Tayreim Derech Eretz. And if you go to Washington Heights, you see a lot of the young people are in Kailam and Lakewood or whatever it is. In fact, this is a big machlokas. Rav Mantal is the Rav of Washington Heights now. So Rav Mantal got up at a yard site of Rav Hirsch, and he said something like, "Torah Derech Eretz is no longer Nogeya here, because we live in such a decadent society, we have to push people to full-time Torah, and even Rav Hirsch would be maskim." So this precipitated a riot among the older. I don't know how well 90-year-old people can riot, but the elders of the congregation were very incensed. They wanted to fire him. Some of them walked out. They said, "This whole kehila is miyusad." Reb Breuer. Reb Breuer survived the war. Right? Reb Breuer came to America. Reb Breuer was Reb Hirsch's grandson, grandson from, you know, because Reb Shlomo Breuer was Reb Hirsch's son-in-law, and this is, what is Reb Breuer's first name? Rosie Breuer was the grandson. So the whole kehila was miyusad on the idea of college and parnasa and chachma and learning every day, avada being kovei mutaira, but not only doing that. And now the Dor Chadash, you know, repudiated. So the MS is, Baruch Hashem, you still have a beautiful kehila, but it's not Reb Hirsch's kehila by any means. So you are correct. There are Yekesh kehilas, but that's really from a different perspective. It's not a resuscitation of Tairim Derech Eretz. It is simply wanting to go back to the Minhagei Ashkenaz, which even before Reb Hirsch, you know, the old Minhagim of Ashkenaz, the Ma'aril, saying Yitzris, all the stuff that for 50 years B'nai Torah tried to get away from, and now they want to go back to. It's interesting, it goes in a shalshelis. I think I may have mentioned that in Baltimore there was a famous Yekesh Shul, Glen Avenue, and they abolished all the Yekesh Minhagim because they wanted to keep young B'nai Torah there. And so what happened was, some young B'nai Torah wanted to go back, so they had to break away from Glen Avenue to do in a separate shul exactly what Glen Avenue had been doing, you know, 30 years before. So things go in cycles. That was true even with microphones. It's very interesting. You know, in Baltimore in particular, again, just a little historical note, there was a din in the 1950s. Whether microphones are mutter. Is it usher al smashmiya kol? Is speaking into it? Again, I mean, obviously the psak halacha is that it's usher, but in the 50s there were mekilim. And my Rosh Hashiva Rav Ruderman, asked two people in Baltimore to look into it in terms of technically. And one was Rav Yaakov Weinberg Zatzal, his son-in-law, who later became Rosh Hashiva, who said absolutely usher. And the other was a Baltimore Rav who held that it was mutter. And that Baltimore Rav was a firm Rav, but he was very stubborn. He kept a microphone in his shul until his last day, because he said, it is mutter, no one is going to tell me, and no matter who, whether it's Rav Moshe, whether it's Rav Yashiv, no one's going to tell me. He was very stubborn. He was a European Rav, but he was very, very stubborn. He was not novatal his day to anybody. So what was interesting is that after he was nifter, so why did they keep a microphone? Because they needed to attract people. They weren't attracting people without the microphone in the 50s, modern. Now then what happened was, they eventually got rid of the microphone for the same reason. He said, you know, we're not attracting people with the microphone. We have to get rid of the microphone if we want to attract B'nai Torah. So the microphone was put in to attract people, and the microphone was taken out to attract people. Now the thing is, in a way, this is Achshir Dora. In other words, it's a funny thing. There's a Yerida Sadiris in so many Yonim, but sometimes, Zeldi Yumase, the Avishter makes us have a little bit more Yerush Shemayim on certain present. Well, for example, in the Orthodox community of the 1950s, mixed swimming was very, very common. Checking kashrus based on ingredients without hashgachas, just look at, if you didn't see, you know, pig fat or lard, you know, oh, okay, it's mutter. If it has some...
Well, in America, that was when the European...
Well, European... no, I'm referring to America primarily. I mean, Europeans who were from were stricter, if you were from. Most Europeans were not from, but yeah. Even in Eretz Yisrael, this is hard to believe, Eretz Yisrael is a yeshiva. We had stuff in vending machines that it's hard to believe that didn't have hashgachas. You looked at the candy, if you didn't see anything that was obviously treif, people ate it. So Baruch Hashem, hagam that there's such a shrek lecha yirida sadairis, on certain inyonim in America, people became a bit more machmer. In fact, a lot of the conflict between the so-called modern Orthodox is they want to be machzer atara liyashna. They say, what are you doing? All these changing, you know, we used to do this, we used to have dancing, and we used to have mixed swimming. We want to go back to the way Frumkite used to be, you know. when it was really, Kalisha for sure was. I mean, these things were pushed. These were not even known. These were not, people didn't even, covering hair, Bichlal. So the modern Orthodox claim, we want to go back to the way, Yiddishkeit used to be, in the 1950s, 40s, yeah.
Is Tyrem Dar Heinz the only, major difference between Germany and Hungary?
Yeah. I don't want to get into Torah and Derech today, but Torah and Derech Eretz was not the same as modern Orthodoxy. Torah and Derech Eretz did indeed preach the virtue of secular education. So in a sense, Haskalah and that have a common denominator. But it was mechuber with tremendous Yiras Shemayim, tremendous diktuk in mitzvahs. That's the jokes you make about Yekis. I mean, their conscientiousness in doing mitzvahs, being koveya itim latayra. I mean, the old story about the Yeki that tells his wife one Ma'ariv, he's going to be a little late today. Why is he going to be late? Because we're saying the same Talmud Matir was December 4th, so davening will be a little longer than usual. Same bracha, the same Talmud Matir, Okay. So one shouldn't confuse it, meaning to say, in fact, even the Chazon Ish was, the Tarim Derech Eretz Yid, I have to say, was a little bit of a confusion even for the Chazon Ish, because the Chazon Ish, of course, talked about only if you're lan ba'umka shel Torah, is it possible to have true Yiras Shamayim, and if you're involved in the secular world, it's very difficult. But the kasha was, we have Torah and Derech Eretz. So he writes in the Igris, and Luna will be talking, Azal Lashon, chutz maybe, he doesn't say what he's talking about, but this is what he's talking about, chutz maybe somebody who was raised mi'aldusay in such an environment of Yiras Shamayim Tahira, that it was Yirasai Kaidemes Lechachmasai, maybe there you'll get an emesteka Yare Shamayim. Now he doesn't say what he's talking about, but this is what he's talking about. In other words, the Chazon Ish understood that the Torah Derech Eretz was not Stam a modern guy. In fact, if anything, he was a very old-fashioned guy. I mean, Beteva, very, very conservative type of personality, and tremendous, tremendous Yiras Shamayim. I mean, you have to understand, it's a different mentality. A Torah Derech Eretz Yid to come 1 minute late. It's not Stam punctuality. That's true also. But it was a Yiras Shamayim to come 1 minute late and miss an Amen of Birchas HaShachar. That's a chorban. That's a big deal. It's not like, I don't want to say us, I'll say me. Let's say, come a little late. Okay, I'm a little late. All right, this and that. I mean, I'll be in time for Baruch and Kedusha, this was a big deal. And the Chazon Ish himself had to be makir that Rav Hirsch's Mahalich worked. And now, again, I'm getting ahead of myself. Rav Dessler Tainer, that the Pagam is, Tayreim Derech Eretz is not going to produce Gedolim. That's what he said. It's not going to produce Gedolim, but it'll produce. In fact, Rav Dessler had a whole idea that Tayrim Derech Eretz will produce more Yirei Shamayim than a chinuch that only gives the option of total immersion in Torah, because people are going to be mirate against that, and they'll leave it, and you'll have kids at risk. Tayrim Derech Eretz will ensure more Erlecha Balabatim than any other system, because it gives options, it gives choices, but you're not going to get Gedolim. And I'll get to Rav Dessler later. Rav Dessler made a very controversial statement that he said, this was his Lashon, it's an amazing Chiddush. Chazal have a Lashon, Elef Nichnasim Lamikra, 1,000 people go in to Cheder to learn Chumash, and only 1 out of 1,000 is Yaisei Lahaira, becomes a gadol that can paskin. Okay, so that's empirically that's true. But Rav Dessler says the following: it's kedai to lose 999 nefashis in order to produce the 1 out of 1,000. So he says the whole justification of the yeshivas. He says yeshivas may not help. In other words, there may be better ways to produce Erlech HaBalabatim. But it's kedai that people are not achieving all that they could achieve if this is a system that's geared to produce godless. This is a big, big controversy. I'll come back to it. This is in the Michtam Eliyahu, in one of there are some letters in the back of one of the Chalokim. I can tell you exactly where, but this is Rav, it was, but so Rav Dessler was makir the Torah Derech Eretz thing. But again, you have to understand, Rav Hirsch was not a modern Orthodox guy in that way. Rav Hirsch, in terms of being mechaber with reform, he was absolutely positively, he was as machmer as the Chassam Sofer. This was the Kabbalah that Rav Hirsch had, yeah.
Then how does Rav Dasso explain that there were Yekshugdol?
There were what?
Yekshugdol.
I didn't hear, there were?
Yekshugdol.
Yekshugdol. Well, who are you referring to?
The Aruch Haner.
Oh, no, no, okay. The Aruch Haner is pre-Rav Hirsch, right? The Aruch Haner was Rav Hirsch's Rebbe.
I understand,
yeah,
but
yeah.
I'm saying...
Well, you certainly have. I mean, you have the Pnei Yoshua. In fact, this was the amazing thing. In the century before the Reform Movement, Germany was very, very glorious. If you go back far enough, you have Rashi, in the Ballet Tysus, France and Germany, going all the way back. In fact, they were in Germany before they were the Rush. The Rush was in Germany. Then after the Crusades, he went to Spain. In fact, the Rush, you have to realize, the Rush is a big, big, big historical figure. The Rush was Machaber, the Mesoires of Ashkenaz and Sfarad at a time when there wasn't email or communication, because he went from Germany to Sfarad in the Tor. That is why the Tor was such an authoritative sefer. The Tor is the Rush's son, because the Tor was Bakant. He was familiar with all of the different Mesoires in Am Yisrael. In fact, the two Rishonim, pardon me for digressing, I'll get back to your question. The two Rishonim that are considered to be very, very pivotal in the development of the Chibur of Torah Shebaal Peh in all its Chalakim are the Ramban and the Rush. The reason why this so is the Ramban brought the Mahalchim of the Balei Taisvis to Spain. The Balei Taisvis were in France and Germany, and they're the Ashkenazim. And the Ramban had learned for a while there, and whatever it is, the Ramban brought back that Shita, and that became this Pashet as a Shita of Ion among Spartan as well. So that's the Ramban. And the Rush did it in reverse. The Rush brought the Minhagim of Ashkenaz to Sfarad, and therefore they're very pivotal. So Germany had many guys, Rebbe Kiveger, who's, I guess we can call him an adopted Litvak, but Rebbe Kiveger was a Rav in Germany. That's where Rebbe Kiveger's Rabbanus was. The Chassam Sofer, who was in Pressburg, which was Austria-Hungary, the Chassam Sofer was born in Frankfurt. Frankfurt was his shtub. Rav Nosson Adler, the Hafla. These are the Gedolim right before the Reform Movement. Tremendous. The Aruch Haner, it is said, maybe it's chauvinistic, it is said, the Aruch Haner was the last Gadol, historical Gadol in Germany. Now you can say, what about Rav Hirsch himself? Okay, yeah, that's, I don't want
to...
His
Tanya was on the term
Rav
Hirsch or going to college?
Well, the Torium Derech Eretz basically meant, practically, university education.
But the Aruch Haner coming before
They're always going to be, under all circumstances, there are going to be Yechidei Skula. But he said that B'derech Klal, it is not calculated, it is not Mesugal to produce Gaon HaYavam. This is what Rav Dessler Tanya. You need a total immersion. The Chazon Ish said the same thing. On the other hand, this is the tragic compromise. This is a compromise that we have to grapple with all the time. If you think about it, I think I had mentioned that yeshivas like Volozhin in Europe were not for the Hamonah. You know, if you were an average guy, you wouldn't even get to Volozhin. And in fact, an average person didn't go to yeshiva at all. I mean, you went to cheder till you were 14 or 15, and then you would be apprenticed to work as a shoemaker or a tailor, and you would learn every day, sometimes maybe only in a Yaakov shir or a Chai Yodam shir. That's how we get the phrase Ein Yaakov Yid. But you lived in an atmosphere of Yiras Shemayim, etc. But the Yeshiva Gedolos were elitist institutions. They were the Harvard, the Yales, the MITs of the world. And in fact, as I mentioned, Rav Chaim Volozhiner's Kavana, at least in part, in being Miyasid Volozhin, was to be Leichaim against Haskalah. Because Haskalah has such an intellectual attraction for brilliant people. He wanted to show that in Torah you can find the same thing. Rav Chaim Soloveitchik's Derech, as opposed to Rav Chaim Volozhiner, many say, was min hashamayim niskala to give people an idea that Torah, again, it sounds crazy to say, Torah can be as deep as any secular discipline. It was Meishach that. So instead of just information that you memorize, you know, there's lumdus and theory. In fact, Rav Chaim was, there were people who were against Rav Chaim's there, you know, the Ritvaz, not the Radvaz. The Radvaz is in the time of the Beis Yosef, but the Ritvaz, Rav Yaakov David of Slutsk, writes in his Hakdamah. Now again, he doesn't mention names, so there's a machlekes which gadol he was attacking. But he says he's of the old school of learning, and he doesn't like the chemical. What do you call it? Kimoi, he says, the harkava of chemical elements where you're mixing all sorts of things to creating new ideas. Now there's a machlekes. Is he talking about Rav Chaim or Rav Shimon Shkap? There's a machlekes. They still argue over which gadol he's attacking. But there were people that claimed that Rav Chaim Brisker, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik, was secularizing Limud HaTorah by making it like a university discipline with, you know, concepts and whatever. But many say, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky said that Rav Chaim's derech was matzil many, many people from Haskala by giving them an intellectual geschmack in learning. His grandson, again, don't report me for mentioning him, but he was an Adam Gadol, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik, not of Brisk here, but of YU. One said, okay, again, whatever. He said that he says, before my grandfather, Yoridea was just pots and pans. Okay, it's not that. He says, my grandfather made it, you know, concepts, musagim, yisaydas, and the like. And, you know, whether that's totally true or not, certainly that was many people's perception. And the MS is, that's why I mentioned, when Rav Chaim was the younger Rosh Hashiva in Volozhin, and the Netziv was the head Rosh Hashiva, the Talmidim, the Iluyim, mainly gravitated to Rav Chaim. Rav Chaim was extremely popular, and it's a testimony to the Netziv's anivus and greatness in Midas, that he essentially wanted somebody who, to some degree, you know, kind of undermined a little bit the Netziv's authority. Now, Rav Chaim did not do anything to be pagay. Rav Chaim, number one, married the Netziv's granddaughter, and he was machabed the Netziv tremendously. But Lamaisa, people gravitated more to Rav Chaim than to the Netziv, precisely because of the Luyisha, you know, Mahalchim.
Yeah. In today's age, what would Rebbe say, which Mahalch is more benefit?
So I really cannot be machrier, but I just want you to understand the question, and then ask your local Orthodox Rosh Hashiva or Rabbi. And that is the following. I don't want to talk about Yeshiva Gedolah for a moment. Let me talk about high school, just to keep it out of the realm of direct controversy. You have a high school shiur, Yeshiva Ketana shiur. Okay? So he's going to share, so the Rebbe sits down and tells them a Rav Chaim and a Katsais and a Nesivus. And, you know, it sounds exciting, it sounds good, but the truth of the matter is, the kid doesn't read the Taisvus correctly. The kid doesn't know what Rashi says. He doesn't really know what the Gemara says. But he hears this real exciting thing that's so geschmack. But, you know, you walk away with not a lot. And if you think about it, in an ideal curriculum, again, let's talk about high school, we can extrapolate the Dailachim of Vermeza, if you apply it further than that. If you had, let's say, strong foundation in Chumash and Rashi, and learn a lot of Mishnayos, essentially go back to Pirkei Avos, Ben Chumash Lemikra, Halacha Lemaisa, covering a lot of Gemara with a lot of Chazara, without all of the complicated Ian, for most people, that would be a much better mahalach, actually, for most people. But again, the time is going to be that for the people who potentially will become the gedolim, this will stunt their growth. So really, if you think about it, the whole mahalach of yeshivas is really, on some level, maybe it's actually a little different because we have people who come in at different backgrounds, but it really is kind of saying to produce the gadol, we will do something that may not be the best thing for everybody.
So before Rav Chaim, everyone's growth was
stunted? No. But even, I mean, Rav Chaim didn't invent Ian. I mean, there was Kisais, there was Nesivus, there Rebbe Kivager, Chassam Sayyid, they're all before Rav Chaim. But I mean, not just Rav Chaim's derech in particular, I just mean the emphasis on deep analytical learning. Deep analytical learning is not necessarily the mahalich for the average person. Now, in the yeshivas like Volozhin, there were no average people. What do they say? Everybody was an I mean, obviously, like anything else. If you have a yeshiva of Eloyim, there will be the worst guy in yeshiva, but whatever it is, the worst guy in yeshiva was still a very, very accomplished, a very accomplished person. So, in a sense, our problem is that Baruch Hashem, because of maybe you read us a diaries, we now have everybody goes to yeshiva because everyone needs to be in yeshiva because the environment is so contaminating that it's going to be machriv you if you stamazai go to work after high school. But what we're doing is we're still gearing our curriculum at the Harvard, MIT, nuclear physics level when the people who are in yeshiva are not all mesugal to be nuclear physicists. The justification will be this will produce the gedayla. But the counter argument is it's going to stare the development of people who are not going to be gedayla. For example, if you're margul yourself in learning be'ian, it's going to be very difficult to sustain that in the working world, right? In the working world, it's going to be difficult to have that type of mahalik of learning. And the truth is, people leave yeshiva with many, many deficiencies. I was once at Shabbos meal, there were some briskers. Tell me them a brisk there. And they're talking about what they're doing. Okay, that's fine. I just listen. I don't say anything at all. But one of the women, for some reason, got interested in the conversation and said, "What do you know? Do you know any halakas? Do you know this and that?" She says, "Well, we'll ask our wives if we have a shayla." The wife knows Hilchos Shabbos. And the like. So this is the issue. The issue becomes, this is the question practically, should we create alternative mostos that will create a curriculum that will speak to people who don't necessarily have the kochos of great in-depth eon, in which you would stress bekiyas, you would stress yediyas, you would stress halacha. I'm not going to be machriya here at all. All I'm telling you is this is a big, big machlokes. Yesh aimrim that it's kedai, because this way you have yeshivas for gedolim and then you have mostos for other people. Some people say, huh? I don't want to identify all the names, but they're yeah.
What's the zichushit?
Say again?
The zichushit is...
Huh?
Similar to
Zilberman. Oh yeah, Zilberman is for younger, but that's for younger, yeah. Now, Yeshayrim, you can't do that, because what's going to happen is that some of the people who might potentially become Gedalim under the existing system are going to take the shortcut and move there.
But isn't that Bidei Shemayim?
What?
Who becomes a gadol?
No, I understand, but people have bechira too. It's not automatic. People have bechira. I mean, listen, Harry Wolfson, who was a Talmud of Slobodka, and later became a world famous professor of Judaic studies in Harvard. He certainly had the mind to become a gadol, but he decided.
No, I was not asking them in their bechira, but is it also the person who's doing that methodology of even in the coming ground in Gemara and Chazar and Halacha is also going to become a gadol just his way?
I understand. When I say gadol, I don't necessarily mean gadol hador. I mean, how many people were going to... But a gadol, great Talmud Chacham, meaning to say, to become a great Talmud Chacham, the Chazon Ish says you have to have a tremendous yigiyah b'tayra that stretches you and challenges you, and it can't just be information. And some people say a third pshara. They say it's good to have these alternative things, but they shouldn't be called yeshiva. They should be called machon, they should be called... Now, why is a title important? I mean, you create something that's a yeshiva, don't call it a yeshiva, call it something else. Because they taina that the tzura of a yeshiva has to actually recognize the highest level of learning, and that's the she'ifa, that is the highest level. And then we do other things for people, whether it's combining secular studies, or combining parnasa, or emphasizing bekiyas, or all of those different things. So there are different shitas in this matter. And the truth of the matter is, though, that even in a mainstream yeshiva, we often make compromises. For example, in many yeshivas, including here, there may be a shir that's still an Ian shir, let's say Rav Pindrus, but it emphasizes more halacha l'maisa. And there is different options away from the standard yeshivasha lumdus that people are working on. Neri Yisrael has, you may know the famous Rabbi Yisachar Friend, a very, very popular speaker. His shir in Neri Yisrael is basically it's not a Bekiah shir. It's a shir with Mar Makomas and Ian, but it's more of an Ian that's more practical. It's less lumdusha, less theoretical, and it's grounded to give people more of a basic idea in important sukkahs. So this is Chanoich Lenar al Pidarka. So these are difficult shilas. To be a Rosh Yeshiva is not an easy thing. What do they say? If you want a job where you sit and learn, you become a stockbroker. You want a job where you sit and learn. Rosh Yeshiva is not a good job because, number one, you're collecting money all the time. How hard Rav Natza works to keep our institution afloat. But in addition, you have very difficult chinuch decisions. And what gets more complicated is that even if you have to preserve the tzura of a yeshiva a certain way, because this is the Messiah and this is the way that will create big Talmidei Chachamim, but at the same time you try to accommodate yechidim. For example, let me just mention two examples. College. And going back to the United States here. In the 50s and 60s and early 70s, most of the big yeshivas in the United States did offer college programs, meaning say students would go to college at night and they would get credit. I'm including Mir, Torah Vidas, Chaim Berlin. They offered college. There are many musmachim from Mir in America who got a BA, while they were in yeshiva. In the early 1970s, for reasons that are not so clear, they were mevatel them. So now you have YU.
Not everyone.
Who not?
Who's mevatel?
Chaim Berlin is college? Is that still true? Huh? Okay, that I didn't know. Still have it. Did it come back? I heard years ago that they were mevatel.
It wasn't on the front page of the attempt.
Okay, I have to check. Now you have, of course, you have YU, of course. You have YU, and you have Lander Torah, which is actually it's a nice place medrash, which includes it, and of course you have the granddaddy of this in America, which is Neri Yisrael, which I have a special feeling for, and Rav Ruderman was the first one. Rav Ruderman was the first person who introduced the notion of allowing yeshiva guys to go to college, and his cheshbon was that he wanted to be marbet Torah. He knew that Americans, for various economic pressures or parental pressures, want their kids to be educated, to be able to go to work. And if there was no yeshiva that allowed a college program, these bacharim would not learn at all. So he felt it was kedai to create within the miskeres of a yeshiva an opportunity to get a secular education, because he felt this would be marbe, the limud of Torah in America, and other yeshivas agreed with them, at least initially, although they may have phased it out. Now we know that this was a matter of great chilukei deis. Rav Aaron Kuklin, who was Rav Ruderman's cousin, and they were very, very good friends, they were very, very close, was absolutely misnaged to that idea. Rav Aaron Kuklin basically felt that it's not shayach within a yeshiva to bring in limudei chol, and it doesn't make a difference if it's in the yeshiva or you're sending the guys out. He says a yeshiva has to be miyusad al tayrus hakaidish. Also, the Stipler from Eretz Yisrael, which Bukhal had a different messiah. The Stipler was very close to Rav Ruderman. They were very, very close. And in the early Kehilos Yaakovs, you will actually see that the Stipler expressed hakaras hatayv for whatever financial support. But in the reprints, they took Rav Ruderman's name out, because they say that the Stipler was very, very upset at the Rosh Yeshiva, my Rosh Yeshiva being machnas, the ability of limudei chol within the miskeres of a yeshiva. Then he had a secondary aspect, because in those days, now it's Johns Hopkins is the main institution they work with, but in those days Loyola College was the main college that accepted yeshiva credits. Loyola College was a Jesuit college, a Catholic college, and every classroom had a crucifix. So the Shiva held it was much like a hospital, whatever it is.
You didn't have your room.
Huh? Right. So the stipend was... So that the frat got the stipend very upset, just that particular frat. But the point is, you had great chilukei deis between Rav Aaron and, let's say, the Rosh Shiva, my Rosh Shiva. But afilo hachi, even Rav Aaron, who was a tremendous kanoi against being machnas limudei chol into a yeshiva, when there were individual yechidim who would come to him, individual yechidim, for whatever reason, he would say like this. He would say, listen, I can't accept you into Lakewood if you're going to go to college, but you're welcome to learn here. We'll get you a chavrusa. You're not officially part of the yeshiva, but be in the avir, etc. And so the point is, there is always a chiluk between the klal and the yachid. And I have to say that this is really one thing that Orson Meir is mishtadl to do, to give you a little commercial in Shevach of our Maised. And that is, you know, yeshiva has shiurim, it has a schedule, it has a masechta. And yet, sometimes guys need to do something else. So we have guys who hang around in Mir and go somewhere else, do something different in the afternoon. Now, if you had every single person doing their own thing, you wouldn't have a yeshiva anymore. So again, but what is the idea? The idea is that side by side with the takana of a klal, how you run something as a klal, there is the notion of chanaych lenar al pi darkei, to give people an individual derech, and you try. And that's one of the most difficult issues, because how do you do so without undermining the maaseh, without undermining the hashkafa of the maaseh? But as I say, I will tell you, I know this, that Rav Aaron Cutler, who was an unrelenting misnagei to being machnis limudei chol as an official part of the yeshiva, there were yechidim that he gave rishus, and they continued to learn by him. But officially, whatever that even means, I don't know what the significance is. But officially, they were not part of the yeshiva, but they were welcome to come in, like any yid, to come in and learn Torah. And Rav Aaron was makar of them. Rav Shach was the same way. Rav Shach was the same way. I should mention here in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, the visceral opposition to limud echol is much stronger, even on what we call a high school level, even on the yeshiva katana level, and that's. Are one of our problems with the government right now, in addition to the draft, is limud echol. And yet, individually, for some people it was kedai, for some people it was necessary, and you do, you know, yeah.
How does everything compare to Europe, let's say 30 years ago?
So here I want to say one thing. I do want to say, well, we'll have to end here. I just want to say one very important Tahara. The issue of secular studies in the 19th century.
We have
10
minutes.
Oh, we have 10 minutes? Okay. For me, maybe an hour. Okay. The issue of secular studies, whether it comes via the Haskalah, whether it comes via the Reform movement, whether it comes via Torah Derech Eretz, is a different type of issue than we face today. And that's why you can't really even use Torah Derech Eretz as a precedent to this. 19th century Europe was a genteel intellectual society. And the nisyanus that people faced were nisyanus of the mind, that they would be exposed to Spinoza. Spinoza is a genuine, I mean, Spinoza is earlier, but let's say Kant, Spinoza, the great philosophers. And they would come to Kfira because they're going into these ideas. By the way, Spinoza, it's hard to find a real Apikoros, because most Apikorsim are Amoratsim. They don't know enough to be an Apikoros. But Baruch Hashem, Spinoza was a real Apikoros, a Yid who learned, Spinoza Jewish, a Yid who knew Torah, a Yid that was Yodea Sefer, and he just rejected it. He introduced the idea of, he was before the Reform movement. He could not establish him. Someone once asked me, why didn't Reform start with Spinoza? Spinoza was a loner. He was not a person who organized the movements by any way. But Spinoza was a real kaifer, and in fact, the whole ceremony of how they used to know how to do cherims, real do cherim right. You know, here you walk outside, a pashkevilin says somebody's in cherim. No big deal. But there, they have 400 shaitans. The whole Kehila wears black talesim. I don't know where you even get a black talesim. They wear black talesim, and they light candles in the whole room, pitch black, but they have candles, and they blow, like the Gemara says, 400 shofars, and they excommunicated Baruch Spinoza from Klal Yisrael. That's a real chayr. So I want to say, so the challenge there was intellectual challenge.
Sounds like a school of about a rabbinic.
right. So the thing is, so Mimela, so we talked about the fact that if there's a Yesod of Yiras Shamayim, or if you have Reb Chaim's Derech of Amkus, no, that can combat the intellectual challenges. Today, Halavai, you know, somebody in college would read Spinoza or Kant. I don't say Halavai, but that's not the issue. You know, somebody is not going to go off the derech today, huh?
I read Spinoza.
Okay, well, you're an intellectual. Okay, you're a Hashem. But you know, today, most people, some people accept, some people yetzim in a klal, but today they're not sitting around reading, you know, Aristotle or Plato or Kant or Spinoza. Or,
it wasn't my choice.
Okay, it's in the curriculum, I understand, but they do it just to get by, like all exams. So today, the nisayon is taiva. It's not kefira. It's taiva, the decadent of lifestyle, the idea of nefkeris, whether it's drugs or alcohol or partying. This is a very different design. You know, Rav Shimshon Aval Hirsch's university was a very masuder, moralistic place. You know, people dressed, the goyim dressed sanua. Now, what they did privately is a separate thing. But you know, there was tzinias, there was refinement, even covering hair. You know, you think it wasn't only Jewish married women, a regular, you know, moral woman, you know, covered her hair. She wore a bonnet outside, you know, she didn't walk out. So, it's a totally different science. So the fact that Rav Hirsch, you know, allowed this, like, secular education in that environment is, I'm not saying he wouldn't here, but it's no raya here. I mean, the challenges are much more behavioral and taiva than they are intellectual. We don't live in a very intellectual society. In fact, even the surah of Kirov in the Baal Teshuva movement has changed quite a lot. If you go back, I mean, not totally, I don't want to say totally, but if you go back to the 70s, you know, there were these all-night discussions about the meaning of life. In part of it's the hippies, the meaning of life and the purpose of life and how do you know? That Baruch Hashem, we still have some of that too. But now, you know, there has to be much more emotionalism. Kumsitz, Karl Bach Minyanim. Again, I'm not putting it down. I'm not putting it down. But part of it is that we live in a generation that is more connected to emotion and feeling, which to some degree is a strength also. It's a maila also. But it's a different type of nisayon. The nisayon of the college campus is a taiva nisayon. It is not so much an intellectual nisayon. Once in a while, you still hear about somebody who becomes a kaifer because of ideas, but most of the time it's not. You know, somebody once went to the, go ahead, you know, to go back before this. Somebody once went to the Beis Halevi and said, "I have a lot of kashas on the Torah." So the Beis Halevi said, "You have kashas or you have terutzim?" Meaning, it's not just your kashas, or you want to do something. So in the mele, you have kashas on the Torah, you know, by having terutzim for what you want to do. Yeah.
How much was the Hamunam aware of these philosophical arguments between whether it be Reform or whether it be Mechalism in Derech HaLimud?
Well, Reform, as I say, was not, I don't consider Reform to be a very intellectual movement, but the Maskilim were very, very aware, and in fact...
No, the Hamunam, I'm saying...
How much Hamunam?
Yeah, were people aware that there was Mechalism? Did the normal guy, like, understand the difference between Reform and Reform?
So it really depends on where the normal guy lived, meaning to say, if you lived in a big city, like Warsaw, Krakow, Berlin, Frankfurt, Budapest. So the Yiddish newspapers, there were many, many Yiddish newspapers. And they loved, I mean, there were rival newspapers, and these were even officially religious newspapers, like Hamodia and Yated, let's say. And they loved to fight. They had all these debates, full of Lashon Hara, all these debates about Haskalah and Musar and Chassidus, and whenever somebody made a negative statement, they would do. So if you were a reader, a consumer of these newspapers, you would be pretty familiar and the reports are not always accurate,
well,
but you would know.
Huh? Is that common to read?
Yes, it was common. Newspaper, yeah, yeah. Now, if you were in a shtetl, kind of a little village, you know, they didn't always get the newspapers. So the poor person that was dragging a cart or a donkey or whatever it would be didn't necessarily read the papers. By the way, one little maisa about this. The Nitziv, this is very controversial. The Nitziv had a minhag on every Shabbos. He would learn Shabbos and Erevin. That would be his Seder Hayom. He would learn Masechta Shabbos and Erevin every Shabbos. I think I saw two girsas. Some say Gemara, which is pretty unbelievable, but for the Nitziv, I guess it's Shayach. The other is Mishnayos. Okay, so I don't know. There are two girsas in the Maisa. Now that's not controversial. That's good, right? That's good. But afterwards, he would sit down and read the papers, read the Yiddish papers, which he enjoyed. They came Erev Shabbos, and he says this was a chelek of his Einik Shabbos to see what is going on in the Jewish world all over the place. Now this is in the memoir that was written by Baruch HaLevi Epstein, the Nitziv's nephew, the son of the Aruch HaShulchan. And as you know, this is a memoir of Zichronus that many people say, I don't believe it. But he says, the Nitziv, but I'll tell you, Rav Gifter had a similar mitzvah with Rav Ochanan. He says, when Rav Ochanan came to the United States in 1938 to collect money, and he went back to Poland knowing he was going to his death, and an amazing thing. So Rav Gifter was a boy, was a bachur. He went to visit Rav Ochanan, and he comes to Rav Ochanan's hotel room and says, Rav Ochanan reading Yiddish paper. So, you know, Rav Gifter didn't say anything, but you know, but Rav Ochanan saw that Rav Gifter seemed very, very shocked. So Rav Ochanan said, a Yid, you know, has to make time for two things. You have to finish Shas every year and make a little time to read the paper. And that's in addition to your starim, these are the two things you need to do. You need to do every day.
You say that Rohan said you have to read the paper with a tehillim.
Yeah, yeah, well that's that's goof as two pshatim. Either the pshat is you see the tsaris of Am Yisrael, you have to be mispalel, or fakert, in order that the paper shouldn't be a bad hashpa on you, you have to be mispalel. And the other one, Rav Baruch Ber would not even touch. He would not even touch a newspaper. He says if there was a paper that somebody left on the table, muktzah, even during the week. He says it was muktzah machmas mius, and azam muktzah is not only it didn't Shabbos. He says it's muktzah machmas mius. He would not touch it. He would not look at it.
Same, even during the week, newspapers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what it says. Muktzah machmas mias mamish. So this machlekes is a very says in relation. Now this gets us into the thing that there's gufa in machlekes. Why the Volozhiner yeshiva closed down? We know the Volozhiner was closed down officially by the Russians, by the officers of the Tsar, but there are two different mesiris why it was closed down. The Messiah of the yeshiva world was that the Russian government demanded that they introduce some limudei chol into the yeshiva. And this is through, by the way, the maskilim were responsible for this. It was the maskilim that went to the Russians and said, this yeshiva is a bunch of fanatics, and they need to be people of the world, and we need to produce rabbis who are public speakers, and know history, and know languages, etc. So the maskilim were those. In fact, I want to say that we can say with 100% certainty that in a sense the maskilim were gairim, the segira of the yeshiva. And the maskilim, and that I want to say, that greatly discredited them. People who were even naita taskala, when they saw that the maisa of the maskilim closed Volozhin, they hated. So the maskilim spread a rumor, which is mamish maisi shemer and sheker gamor, that the reason the Nisiv closed the yeshiva is because the Bachrim were not makabel his own son Rav Chaim Berlin to be Rosh Yeshiva. In other words, there's a maisa 2 years before the closing of Volozhin. The Nisiv wanted a retired Eretz Yisrael, whatever he would do here, and he wanted his son Rav Chaim Berlin, who was a Rav in Moscow, to become Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin. And at that time, Rav Chaim Soloveitchik was still the assistant. and the Bachrim were Mayreg. In Vilachan, they always riot, they always rioted over everything. And the Bachrim were Mayreg because they wanted Rav Chaim Soloveitchik to be Rosh Yeshiva. And they went on strike. And Rav Chaim Berlin withdrew his candidacy. The Maskilim, now that's a fact, that did happen. The Maskilim spread a rumor that the Netziv closed Vilachan because his son didn't get the position. Now that's absurd. Number one, it would be absurd because the Netziv would never do that. But number two, the closing of Vilachan killed the Netziv. The Netziv died a year later, pushed out of heartbreak. There's no way he would ever do such a thing. But the real reason it was closed is because the Maskilim convinced the government to make this certain demand. Now, in the Torah world, the Messiah is that the Netziv said, the Isser of Limud Eichol is so strong, it is better to close the Yeshiva Lagamri than to be machnis this tuma into the yeshiva that will be machriv the kedusha of Torah. Now that Messiah is the basis of why Rav Aaron was against Limud Eichol within Lakewood. This is the basis of the Tainus on YU and the Tainus on Lander and all of these mixed institutions. Because you see, the Netziv closed down the greatest yeshiva in Europe not to be machnas Limud Eichol. And this is a famous Messiah in Klal Yisrael that's been passed down. But once again, in the Makor Baruch, the Torah Tamimah's Zichreinus, the Torah Tamimah was a nephew of the Netziv. Because the Aruch HaShulchan was the Torah Tamimah's father. He was a brother-in-law of the Netziv. They married sisters, etc. So he was a nephew. He was 14 years old when Vilachan was closed. He was an Adria. He was the Netziv secretary. He used to spend an hour or two every afternoon writing letters for the Netziv. And he just writes, Mesiach Lefituma. He's not arguing with anything. He says that the Russian government demanded that there be secular studies, this is amazing, from 9 to 3, and Talmud be taught as a course for 2 hours a day. And the yeshiva would have to be closed at night. So, that's a totally different picture. He says the Netziv was not against Limud Eichol. The Netziv was maskim to have an hour or 2 hours of Limud Eichol. This is what the Makor Baruch says. But, he says, to simply say 9 to 3 and 2, to have a yeshiva with 2 hours a day, he says that wasn't shy. Better that people go to their own base medrash, be kover their own storim, than to have a yeshiva like this. Now, I think I may have told you this, Maisa. Somebody translated this chalik of Makor Baruch, the fourth chalik, and they sent it out. Lakewood Cheder sent it out as a fundraiser. And around 3 weeks after they sent it out as a fundraiser, we get a letter from the Lakewood Cheder saying, please send back this book. This book expresses ideas that are keneged Das Torah, and we will give you a full refund of your contribution. So, as you know, when you get a letter like that, everybody goes back and reads the book, even if you didn't even read the book. Now I'm going to read the book. But it turned out that this was the prat that somebody said, it's not shayach to be true. It's not shayach to be true, because the Torah Tamimah is saying the Netziv would have been maskim till Limud Eichol was only the excessive government control and the hours and hours. But if it would have been a little bit, it would have been okay. Not shayach, that's connected to Messiah. So they basically said Rav Baruch Epstein was lying. That's basically what they said. Again, I don't want to be machria. I have no reason to assume that he's a liar. He was in Adria. He was there. And he wasn't saying, it was Mesiach Levituma. He was not saying it to be chaylik on anybody. And the only thing is, I will say that there is one edus to the contrary. And that is Rav Chaim Berlin. Rav Chaim, the Netziv's oldest son, was mayed that he spoke to his father right before the Netziv's Batira. And the Netziv told him, never allow Limud Eichol in the yeshiva. He says, that is why I was maskin to close Vilachan. So apparently you have two contradictory edus a little bit. You have the edus of Rav Chaim Berlin, and you have the edus of Rav Baruch Epstein. Now the Emes says, although you might say, well, the son is closer to his father than a nephew, but the Emes says, Rav Baruch Epstein spent much more time with the Netziv than Rav Chaim Berlin. Rav Baruch Epstein spent every day with the Netziv. On the other hand, he was younger. Now, I would say this. This much I would be maskim to, that no matter what the nisiv sashgafa, its borer of Chaim Soloveitchik was a bigger kanoi. So Rav Chaim Soloveitchik himself was absolutely misnaget to any limudei chol. Legabi the nitziv, yesh laden b'zeh. So it's paradoxical.
The Rav Shach, there wouldn't have been a yeshiva.
Yeah, mimanu.
Even if the nitziv would have been massive, if Rav Chaim would have said he had to close down, all the talmidim went with him.
Well, not all, but the ma'aser that would have happened. If Rav Chaim, although I don't know if Rav Chaim would have been mavato himself to the nitziv, I'm not sure what would have happened. So it's a little paradoxical that Rav Chaim, who was the tremendous kanoi against limudei chol, the nitziv was not such a kanoi. And Rav Chaim was a tremendous kanoi against Zionism, we'll get to that, which the Nitziv was not. But on the American branch of the Soloveitchiks, both Rav Aaron Soloveitchik and Rav Yosef Del Soloveitchik of YU, they were both Zionists and, you know, believers in a certain integration of Limudei Chol. What did they say? They say the Briskers in America are the Zionists, and the Briskers in Eretz Yisrael are the anti-Zionists. So it's interesting how things develop in different ways. Okay.
Yeah.